But I can pick out several places that have 40 and 50 and 60 acres that are in scrub oak, that are not being farmed, that are inaccessible. But now we're a farmer, and let's look at it in a different aspect. And I think the initial drive of the farm assessment laws is you go out there and pick this land, and you clear it, and we'll give you a special tax assessment for it. We also have in the farm community, I can go out and plant Christmas trees, which is a viable crop, and I have no objections to it, with one exception. It is one of the most erosive crops that's ever been known to man, because they cannot find a vegetation crop that will not overcompete with a small Christmas tree. And yet, as a farm crop, I get farm deferral. After 7 years, when I start cutting it, it becomes a capital gains tax, and I'll pay tax on 40% of it. How many things do the farmer need? And I are one. There has to be a limit to what the public can expect to pay to support the farm industry. It has to start supporting itself. And if they cannot compete, then the poor should fall by the wayside. And that includes the 20-acre man or the 15-acre man. But as long as he's making an effort right along with the 5,000-acre, and he meets that minimum commitment, then he ought to have the same acknowledged conditions that the big farmer has. He's trying to raise on his 10 acres of land, 10 head of cattle, because that's all 10 acres of land will hold. Now, if you falsely put in a barrier on an income test that he can't meet, then why did you ever zone him in if you didn't get it? And let's tax him at rural residential prices of $1,000 an acre or whatever, and let him put his house on it. We're arguing all of these things back and forth all of the time, and we created the problem, and we can't seem to get away from it. Any other questions?
Anything else? If not, thank you very much. Don Durkoff? Welcome. Would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Don Durkoff, and I live in Dallas, Oregon. I'm here today appealing to you to let Senate Bill 237, in its entirety, die in committee. It appears to me that the proposed changes to the current law are totally self-serving and really do nothing to enhance good land use planning. But these changes do tend to create the situations where a few special interest groups stand to benefit. These type of changes, in my view, do not make good law, but instead will widen that gap between the landowner and good land use planning. Senate Bill 237 is a windfall which will serve to enlarge government, which is already too large, the size of which we cannot afford and are having great difficulty coming up with the means to support it. To make the changes and enforce the parts of Senate Bill 237 would mean additional employees and increased payroll at all levels of government, greater cost to the landowner either in direct cost or lost land value. In addition, the average citizen landowner probably will not even be aware of these proposals, let alone understand the implications until he wishes to take some action relating to his land or when he receives his tax bill. At that point, it will be too late. The attempt at defining marginal land falls painfully short of identifying the lands which are really marginal, or lands that cannot produce a crop that will sustain an average family. As many farmers will tell you, and as the statistics will bear me out, a second job is mandatory in many cases just to keep the family farm going. For those lands which are less than prime as identified by the ASCS LISA program, subsidization frequently comes from the owner.
Mr. Durkoff, if I could interrupt for a moment. We're concentrating on the tax provisions of...
Yes, sir, but I understand you have already gone through these things, and I was under the impression that you would not be coming back to them necessarily, and I have 5 minutes of testimony.
That's fine.
If I can, I would appreciate it.
Go ahead.
Nor would a proposed definition of marginal land might serve the interests of a few, but for the average landowner in Oregon, it is a step to deprive him of his land. The real intent of the changes as produced by Senate Bill 237 rears its ugly head when we get to Section 7, having to do with hearings officers. Now we can see that a very special interest group is asking that the representative form of government be abandoned and the power to make land use decisions be placed in the hands of a few, with no right of appeal. I truly hope that each of the members of the committee are able to see through this blatant attempt to further destroy our form of government. In addition, having the extension agent select the individuals to be hearing officers, in effect, makes the office of extension agent political in nature, and I'm sure we don't want this. In Section 8, the standing issue again points the way for the special interest group to gain the upper hand at the expense of the landowner. Only those who have been directly aggrieved by a land use action in some measurable way should be allowed standing. Mere acquaintance with the problem or ownership of the same kind of land should not be the basis for standing. In the section relating to previously recorded subdivisions and partitions, there is no distinction made between those partitions which were made many years ago and those which were made subsequent to adoption of a comprehensive plan. Thus, it appears to me that all partitionings which had been previously made could be easily nullified. Another means of intimidating the landowner and subjecting him to unnecessary scrutiny, harassment, and additional cost. Citizens have a right to expect stability in their government, but this bill actually sets the stage for upheaval and turmoil and should be tabled. In those sections relating to taxation, it appears to me the government will be extracting more than its pound and a half of flesh. In my viewpoint, it sets the stage for taxing citizens off of their land and making it deliciously easy for the rich to pick up parcels of land for the amount of the taxes. The deferral system was set up to help people defer the cost of the taxes on their land and at the same time keep the land in some degree of production. And we identify this degree of production by a monetary measure. However, it seems that there is some unwritten law which says that owners of small acreages should not avail themselves of this assistance. Yet, to the best of my knowledge, there is no mention in the present law of a minimum acreage of agricultural land necessary to qualify for the deferral. The government has extended a hand to the landowners and has willingly enticed him to come aboard. Now that we have many, many landowners on board, this bill will force the government to scuttle the ship and drown many of those who have trustingly availed themselves of a heretofore legal program. I beg you, do not tax the people off their land. If change in this area is necessary, then adopt the means which will allow the people to afford their property and at the same time contribute to the good intention of land use planning. I have not addressed each and every change in this proposed bill, but I believe I have addressed a few of the sections which to me demonstrate disregard for the average landowner and citizen and very vividly show that the changes would only serve a special few. To me, this bill does not further the idea of good land use planning, but rather sets the stage for further bickering and lawsuits and makes the cost of land ownership prohibitive for the average citizen and for future generations. I ask you to scrutinize this bill very, very carefully, and when you do this, I'm sure you will see that there is only one course of action. Table it. A little P.S., if I might. You might ask, what is the justification for tabling the bill? One very valid reason, to me at least, is the economic impact that this bill would have on both individuals and the cost of administering to it for the good that we get out of it.
Thank you. I was sorry to interrupt, but we are trying to focus the discussion. I appreciate you coming
and
giving us
so much
on other sections. Senator Cohen had a question.
Yes. Are you currently a farmer?
I currently have some timberland, and I raise beef, and I do a little haying. I do not have much hay ground, so I have to go off my farm to do the haying, but
How
I do.
How many cattle do you have?
I run anywhere from 15, which I have right now, up to about 40 to 50.
Do you get a farm tax, and how many acres do you have?
I have a total of 150 acres, a little over. Most of that, however, is in woodland, over 100 acres.
Do you get a farm deferral and woodland as well? What kind of...
I don't get a farm deferral, I get a forest deferral.
Forest deferral, but you are on a deferral program with it.
That's correct, I am.
What kind of property tax do you pay as a woodlot deferral on the bulk of that? I'm trying to get at the testimony for, you know, to get a comparison of what we're really talking about in terms of the advantages. I guess I'm not convinced the legislature has been led into this and has led people into it. I think that it's been heavily lobbied over the years, and I guess I'm now persuaded that we ought to take a look at what Mr. Wilson said in the sense of is... You know, who does pay for the schools and the rural schools as well? Because we are, those of us who come from marginal areas, if you will, don't think of that so much as expecting our farmland to contribute to the schools. And yet I have, about how much an acre does the deferral provide for you in terms of total? What's your annual tax?
I apologize. I cannot answer you. And the reason I can't answer you, and I'm not sure too many people can who are in deferral program, is because in order to know the difference between the cost, the taxation for the under the deferral program, as opposed to the market value, you have to know what the taxation would be for the market value. That I do not know. Most county assessor's offices provide that service for a fee. You can, in fact, apply to them and say, I would like to know, if I wanted to no longer partake of the deferral program, what would it cost me to buy out of this program? What are my penalties? What are my additional taxes, if you wish?
Yes.
As far as Mr. Wilson's comment, let me make it clear. I do not object to looking at the program, okay? That's not my objection in the tax issue. My objection is to come down in one fell swoop and make everybody dish up for the last years in which they have been under the deferral program, when the government has made it available to you, and they have in fact carried out the program in accordance with the rules. I know in our particular country,
I'm not sure that that's what we're doing, but
it appears to me that that's what is happening. And I know that the assessor in our county in the last year that I'm aware of has gone around to some of the areas in which abuses of the deferral program have taken place, and they have taken them off of the tax roll.
You mean off of the deferral?
Off the deferral. I shouldn't say tax roll. Take them off the deferral and made them thump with the back taxes.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't want to carry on too long.
I don't want to imply that should not be looked at.
Okay.
My concern is twofold in that don't drop it on them. They've been doing this all this time in good faith. Give them an opportunity, either relieving of the tax, which I don't think I agree with, but by the same token, don't make them come up tomorrow with it.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, sir, let me ask one question. You described what your situation is. What specific thing on this bill would affect you adversely?
Excuse me.
Well, I think...
I'm not saying that that's the test of a good bill, the fact that it doesn't affect you or it does, but I'm trying to understand what specific thing in this bill would affect you.
I think three or four things. In fact, most of them.
Well, just name what are you.
The definition of marginal land. Since I own timberland, I've got timberland. You can't make a living off of timberland except once every 40 years. That's about what you can do.
So you're saying that this, that the definition of marginal land in here would change the laws with reference to woodlots?
If I understand it, yes. That's the way I understand it.
And that's a question I've asked. You've heard me ask that before, and I'm not that answered. Okay, anything else?
I have great opposition to the attorney section, attorney fees. You make it one-sided. If you're going to make it at all, which I don't advocate, but if you're going to make it at all, at least give both sides an opportunity to recover the fees. I mentioned one other item in here. Let me check back that I didn't... agree with, the hearings officers. We have a representative form of government. You may not like it, and there are certainly people who say cronies beget cronies and that sort of thing, and there are abuses, there's no doubt about it. But I don't see that as the reason to set up a hearings officer, which is a special interest concerning that particular properties. That invites special interest in all other land use areas.
Okay.
And I don't think that's right.
Yeah.
I think I spoke on the taxation.
Well, the taxation one doesn't affect you, does it?
Well, it could affect me, yes. It could affect me. It does not currently affect me, okay? And I don't intend to let it affect me, but there are those that it would affect. If you are going to have properties that are not zoned EFU and drop this tax on them and make them pay it all up, then, like Mr. Wilson said, you have allowed the zoning of these things. Now you're going to tell them they can't partake of the benefits available in the taxation area.
Well, that's been pretty consistent, though, with all of our special taxation laws, that if the land, when at any point in which the land failed to meet the definition by which it was put under special taxation, then that conversion of that land to another use resulted in a penalty with reference to back taxes. And we've gone back as far as 10 years and 5 years and so forth, so that really hasn't changed the principle, has it?
Well,
I'm trying to discover how you think this bill changes that principle.
The way I read it, I believe it does. I believe that the mechanics are there to allow that to happen. Okay, I don't know that it will, but I feel that the mechanics are there to allow it to happen.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Chairman.
Sir Dave.
Well, you're afraid that if you come in on the term marginal land, you lose your exemption, aren't you? The woodlot owner? Is that what you're afraid of under this bill?
No, because I don't think there are such things as marginal lands under the definition that you have. Yet neither are there lands which are capable of producing a reasonable income.
Is the income test, as a woodlot owner, bother you? Is that what bothers you?
Yes.
In this bill?
Yes.
Okay. Because you don't think you're going to meet that even close to meeting that even when you harvest in 4 years. What is your income, basically off the type of operation you have? What would be your average income? In some realm, you don't have to tell me exactly, but would it be over, with 150 acres, would it be over 20,000 a year or under?
Under.
It'd be under. And how do you amortize that off over a 4-year period with harvesting your timber? I mean, what's your amortization factor to break even factor? You must use some type of leverage for your farm.
The only thing that I do is I harvest some each year, a very minimum amount.
Okay.
For two reasons, but basically to manage the timber, because I have a rather uneven stand and heretofore it was not cared for, and I need to even it up a little bit to where I can. And do a little better job of managing, and that's what I'm in the process of doing now. Hopefully at some later time I can then have somebody, well, I doubt that I'll ever see it, but somebody will have timber that is manageable.
There are a lot of farmers that are doing this now, are they? Are they tying woodlot operations I beg your pardon?
I really don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Don Schillenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Don Schillenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. Farm Bureau is concerned especially with sections 15 and 16 of this bill. The bill, as it goes, brings about a major change inside of farm use zones by requiring both an annual application for farm use assessment and an income test, neither of which are currently required. We would not oppose an income test on small acreages. However, we believe that generally An income test is not appropriate inside a farm use zone. This land has been set aside by zoning for agricultural purposes, and that's the way it should be assessed. The annual application for land inside a farm use zone is totally unacceptable. What we don't need in agriculture is more regulations and more forms to fill out. Excuse me. To address our concerns, Farm Bureau suggests the following amendments. On page 11, line 5, after subsection 1, begin the sentence with, except that ORS 308.372, 308.375, and 308.399, subsection 6, shall not apply to farm units larger than 5 acres. And then continue on with existing
wording. You have amendments that you're going to submit for these?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Day, yes, I do have them. I'm sorry, I don't have them typed up at this time. I didn't get my testimony done in time for my secretary to type it up.
Okay, could you get those to us sometime tomorrow so we'll have them for Wednesday?
Hey, you're a registered lobbyist here. You know the rules. And it goes a lot easier when we can look at these bills and study your amendments instead of coming in that way, okay?
Thank you. Appreciate that. This change would exempt farms larger than 5 acres inside a farm use zone from the annual application, the income test, and the tax penalty that would result from not meeting the test. On line 10, add the word and to the end of the new wording and move that new wording to the beginning of the line and reinstate the original language. These proposed amendments would preserve the intent of subsections 1 and 2 and allow for the movement of language from ORS 215-203 to 308.370 as proposed in Senate Bill 581 before the Economic Activities Committee. We believe that would be a good move and hope you would make allowance for it. With these changes, lines 10 and 11 on page 12 would not be necessary, and on page 14, line 40, the number subsection 4 could be removed. We believe these changes will accomplish what both the bill drafters and Farm Bureau are trying to achieve. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to try and answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir, Dave?
What is the Farm Bureau trying to achieve with this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Day, I'm not saying that we're trying to achieve anything with this particular bill. What I had reference to and trying to achieve was in other committees sort of separate from this one, the Senate Economic Activities Committee, the Senate Rep Committee, the House Revenue Committee.
Could you define for us what that is? Could you define for us what you're trying to achieve, regardless what committee you're looking at?
Okay.
I think that was the question.
I'm trying. You tell me all these committees. I don't care what committee. What the hell do you want to do?
What we want to do, Senator Day, is to, inside a farm use zone, all land should be assessed at farm use value when under the definition that's being used as farm use. That's our goal, and that isn't presently happening.
It has nothing to do with this bill, but you want to be consistent to wherever you are.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, Senator Day.
And you're here exclusively, you're actually dealing with farm use today. You're defining it rather narrowly.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, could you tell me what else you like about this bill if we were to make those changes?
Well, Senator Day, as you are aware, Scott Ashcom of the Oregon Farm Bureau generally has been responsible for this bill and lobbies in this area. I'm not really in a position to talk about the other areas of the bill. He consented that I would discuss with you this portion of the bill since I'm dealing with these portions of the law in these other committees.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Roberts?
Do you believe that the present laws with reference to exclusive farm use zones provide an adequate guarantee that any land which is being used for agricultural purposes gets the tax benefit, but any land in those zones which is not being used for agricultural purposes doesn't get the benefit?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roberts, that seems to be the problem, and you use the word use. Presently, and what brought about a lot of the changes that we're seeking is the fact that at least some assessors interpret no use as a change of use. in the farm use zone. And therefore, when a piece of land is not being used in their interpretation, then in fact it does become disqualified from farm use assessment even though it's inside.
Or for a period of years is not used in commercial farming, indeed is not farmed, you would claim that it's still in agricultural use.
Senator Roberts, inside of a farm use zone, yes.
So any land lying unused in an exclusive farm use zone ought to be taxed for agriculture purposes.
Senator Roberts, that's our position.
Could you give the rationalization for that?
The rationalization for that.
I use the term rationalization. I'm sure you want to say the reason.
Senator Roberts, I would accept either word. The rationalization for that is the fact that this land, through zoning, has been set aside as land for farm use. And we believe it's been set aside for that. It should be assessed as that.
Mr. Chairman?
Even if it's essentially being used for residential purposes, even if it's essentially being used for residential purposes, so the person gets a nice big chunk of land and doesn't use it but puts a house on to live there, but gets the benefit of the exclusive farm use.
Senator Roberts, we're aware that there is pressure, particularly in the small acreage area. I say pressure by people who believe that that is unfair. And as I mentioned in my testimony, we would yield to maybe 5 acres, a 5-acre lot type situation, but the rest of that land is in fact still being preserved for farmland. It's inside that zone, it's being preserved for that, and in order to have it remain there, we feel it should be assessed as farmland. The economics of the situation will normally take care of that situation also. If there's a dollar to be made farming that land, joining the farmers aren't going to let it lie idle.
Would you let somebody build a house on it?
Can't.
Or not being farmed?
Our position is not to increase the amount of non-farm dwellings inside of farm use zones.
Yeah, but it is a farm dwelling if it sits on agricultural land, isn't it? It's been reserved for agricultural purposes?
Senator Roberts, I guess my position would be that not necessarily if that person isn't using it or if that person isn't connected with the farming.
Well, then that's the point, isn't it? That you have somebody, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I just want to carry on that line. If you have 20 acres, it's not being farmed. Somebody goes out and builds a house on it. It continues not to be farmed. Now you've added another residence in an agricultural zone, but the land isn't being farmed. How do you restrict at all the duplication of this kind of use of agricultural land? You can get a nice house on there without having to pay normal property taxes on it. Because by your definition, it's in land that's reserved for agricultural purposes, but which we build houses on.
Senator Roberts, at this point, I will admit defeat. I'm not sure how to answer your question. I see the point you're driving at, and I don't have an answer for you.
I think that's the problem in this bill. It's trying to attack that, and every time you try to attack that problem, somebody comes up with 10 different objections to it, and I'd like to know how to attack it successfully. And I'm not sure that this bill does it. I know the bill has a lot of problems, but I hope that that's what we can find. Excuse me, sir.
Okay, next one of that is Senator
I'd like to take it one step further. With the exception of Senator Roberts' problem, I agree with your stand on farms. And I'd like to work with you to sort of develop some criteria that we use for any new sites, new building sites, and that if you're going to have a new building site, that you'd have some different criteria than if it were a deferral in the sense of non-used land by itself. I think we might look at that in the way of you know, not have, you know, having people qualify, even though it isn't a year, a defined farm use every year, but if you ask to get a building anywhere, then you have to come in with different kinds of proofs that you are going to live there and you are going to farm it, and this is going to be a continuing thing. So it seems to me I'd like to approach that problem that way. Now, we come into a more use the word modular. Let's try to, without all the coloring of that word, get down into some areas where we say, on what criteria shall we decide? Do you think there should be farm deferral in smaller parcels in non-exclusive farm zoning? Other than EFU, should we allow deferrals or continue to allow deferrals? And that's what this bill is supposedly trying to address the problem. How do your people deal with the taxation question and moving in one step closer to the smaller acreages?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, if I think I'm following what you're asking, are you talking about land outside of a farm use zone?
Yes, outside.